Hey gang, this podcast is brought to you by Skull Brew Coffee Company. As you all know, this is a business that I started to give back more to conservation. We roast premium coffee that ships out within just hours of roasting, guaranteeing that you'll get the freshest coffee available. The kicker, we donate 10% of our proceeds back to conservation. You choose where the donation goes when you check out. You can check us out at skullbrewcoffee.com. So let's do something great together and help protect wild places. One cup at a time. Visit skullbrewcoffee.com and pledge your support of conservation today. Hello and welcome to the Truth from the Stand Deer Hunting Podcast. I'm your host, Clint Campbell, and you're listening to episode number 113. Today I'm joined by my good friend, Josh Proffitt, and we're discussing his strategies for breaking down large tracts of public land and killing mature public land bucks. So stay tuned. All right, all right, all right. Happy Wednesday, everyone. Hope everyone is feeling good out there. Got a little nice weather. Was able to get out into the timber and do a little shed hunting. Got back to the family property. Did a little food plot preparation. Got some lime spread, some fertilizer. Did get the chance to just kind of cruise around the one bedding area that I wanted to check out on the newer property to see if I could find any sheds. And, you know, surprise, surprise, I found zero sheds, which probably doesn't come as a shock to many of you out there since I am quite possibly the world's worst shed hunter. But we're quickly moving to spring, so I'm pretty excited about that. Got plenty of work done, pulled all my cameras. I typically don't pull my cameras out of the timber. They typically stay in all year round, but these ones have been out for, man, they've been out for, I think, 2 years straight now. So it was about time to pull those in and do a little bit of maintenance on them, clean them up, make sure they're in good shape and ready to rock and roll for next year. Did check the camera cards in there because I hadn't checked them since, I think it was November 1st or 2nd, I think was the last day that I was on that property before I headed to Ohio for rut. So those things have been soaking for a while. Unfortunately, a handful of them died shortly after that, as far as like the batteries, you know, were, I didn't have enough battery life in them, didn't have any batteries with me. So that was a fail on my part, but a handful of them did have some juice in it. I just got to say, a little discouraged. I was hoping to see a few better deer than I did. There was one, which was the one that I had seen, from the stand. I think it was on the November 1st, I think I saw him. Did get another image of him, I think around the 23rd of November in a different part of the property. And he's a good-looking deer. He would have been a nice Pennsylvania 9-point this year. Hoping that he makes it through to next year, or hoping that it did. I didn't see him on any of my other cameras. He could have quite possibly gone past a handful of them that the batteries had died in. So again, my fail on that part, but he did have a bum leg, so he was kind of limping. So I'm hoping that the winter didn't take him. I'm hoping that he didn't get succumbed to some coyotes, and hoping that he didn't meet the bullet during rifle season. But we'll get these things ready and then put them out, you know, here a couple turnarounds, and we'll be heading toward the head toward Velvet Fest, I guess. And I'll get those out then to see if I can't track him back down and see if he's still around. But did get the food plot work done, a little lime, a little fertilizer, a little bit of frost seeding. I think, as I'd mentioned the last time, I am going to probably put this food plot into soybeans this year, but I did want something for spring green up. So did a little frost seeding of some clover, and then we'll wait till the soil gets to the right temperature to go ahead and put the soybeans in the ground. I have a cool show today. I'm not going to belabor this up front a whole bunch other than, excuse me, other than to make mention that you can still get involved. Today is the last day to get involved in the HB 33 Obsession Bow giveaway. I'll pull all the folks who have entered today when this podcast launches. So you have till the end of the day, till I get home from work and get a chance to pull all those names and stuff together. And then we'll be announcing the winner on the April 3rd podcast. So if you're listening to this in the morning of Wednesday morning, go ahead and head over and make your submission by liking Truth from the Stand Instagram page, liking the Obsession Bow Instagram page, and then commenting on last week's social post that has the Obsession Bow image in it and tag two friends in it. You do that and you will be in the running to win the bow. Again, like I said, I will pull the names at the end of the day on Wednesday as this podcast come out, and get the names out on the April 3rd for who the winner is. But like I said, we have a cool show today. I have my buddy Josh Prophet on, who is from Kentucky. He's BG Bow Hunter on Instagram. Some of you probably already follow him. But he's a dude that tends to get it done in the big woods of Kentucky on public land. He has a knack for finding good deer. I've seen plenty of his trail camera pictures of the hammers that he has seen there. And, you know, a lot of folks, when they think of Kentucky, you know, certain areas of Kentucky, you probably think there's decent deer there. But, you know, by and large, I wouldn't say that it's one of the first ones that comes to mind when you think of big deer. But some of the animals that he's had encounters with, has seen and has harvested, would say that there are some hammers that live on public land in the state of Kentucky. I'm not going to give away necessarily where he's at, and I'm sure during the course of this podcast he won't either. But it's just kind of interesting to see, you know, guys who are hunting public land in some of these, you know, states that maybe aren't as well known that are able to get on good deer. He has kind of a methodology. How he kind of goes about breaking down larger tracts of public land. You know, he prefers to have public land. Or large tracts of public land as opposed to smaller chunks to break down. Now, it does take a little bit more time, a little bit more effort, but he's an effort dude, as you'll kind of gather from this podcast. And that's one thing I really love about him, is that the guy is a boots on the ground grinder, putting in the effort to try to get it done, and he often does. He killed a great deer this year with a trad bow, and he's been, you know, hunting with traditional archery for quite some time now, and with a pretty high level of success. So I won't belabor this any longer. We'll go ahead and get Josh dialed in and talk public land and public land bucks. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Truth from the Stand Deer Hunting Podcast. And today I am joined by, so this is a fellow that some of you probably possibly know from online. I met him through some mutual friends of ours, the folks from Exodus, Chad Rodeo Sylvester. And I'm talking to none other than BG Bow Hunter, as he's called on Instagram, or as his given name, Josh Prophet. What's going on, man?
Oh man, what's up? I'm sitting here enjoying this beautiful Sunday.
That's right, man. I know it's pretty nice out. I know we were chatting yesterday. We've had some nice bluebird days. Unfortunately, I've been stuck inside on both of them, which is unlike me. But I know you got out a little bit, at least. I'm living vicariously.
Yeah, I got out. If the wife lets me, I'm going to try to get out again today, man. I've got cabin fever like no other.
Yeah. I know you're in Kentucky, right? So have you had a rough winter? I mean, has it been pretty bad, or how's it been?
Man, no. I mean, it really hasn't. It doesn't get real cold here. I mean, we get cold snaps and we get a little bit of snow, but it's always pretty much a mild winter with virtually, you know, I bet we haven't got 10, 15 inches of snow all winter together. So
yeah,
it's nothing like them guys up north deal with.
Yeah, I know, man. We had some minus like teen days around here, man, which is, that's even cold for around here. We don't get stuff like that often. And this year actually has been kind of a mild winter as far as the snow goes here in PA. The temps have been pretty cold, but we've had a wet year just in general, man. Like, I don't know that I remember a year that we've gotten so much rain just consistently. And no matter if it's like summer, even during like the drought period we're supposed to have during the summer, man, we got pounded with rain. I don't know. Was it pretty wet for you guys?
Yeah, we did. We had a pretty wet summer. Winter was decent, man. And here over the last month or so, it has just been, I mean, crazy as far as the rainfall that we have got. All the fields still have all kinds of water in them around here.
Really? Well, it's not so bad. Like, I don't mind the rain when we get to, like, I don't know, maybe late August, early September, like whenever I need to go in and kind of do a recon, quick camera check before the season kicks off, and I want to have some low impact or whatever. It's like, I don't mind it being wet around that time frame, man, but it seems like we just couldn't get rid of the rain. I hunted in rain this year more than I probably hunted in rain the past 3 years combined, I think. Which is not good, man. Like hunting in the rain in the saddle, there's really just no way to get out of it. So I was wet.
Hunting in the rain in general, there's no way to get out of it.
Unless
you're a duck hunter or something.
right. Well, it's like I've kind of rigged up some contraptions in the past, like with tree umbrellas and just like the way I can kind of situate myself that I can, if I'm in a stand, I can usually stay out of it pretty well, you know, pretty dry. But in a saddle, man, you're kind of strung up leaning back. So there is nothing you can do because you're kind of leaning back even if you have a tree umbrella or something up, you're leaning out from underneath of it, essentially, you know, getting wet. Right. And then I told this story once, you know, I think it was right after the rut, but, you know, with all the saddle hunting and stuff like that, you're all, you know, you're dependent on your ropes and stuff like that. And I didn't think about it. Mine got wet. I was hunting in the rain. It was actually when I was hunting with Chad, and I came home and I just threw all my stuff in the bed of my truck. Like I always do, have a tonneau cover on it. Went in, you know, went to bed that night or whatever, and it got real cold. And I came out the next morning, threw all my stuff on, hiked into, you know, where I was planning to hunt that day, went to pull my ropes out, and they were just like frozen stiff. Yeah. So it was, I spent a couple minutes at the bottom of my tree trying to bend them loose so I could actually, you know, use them and get them around the tree and stuff like that. It was just, it wasn't good, man. But needless to say, so I know this is the first time I've had you on, man. I know that you and I met out at ATA. I heard Chad, of course, he talked about you, you know, talking about his buddy in Kentucky, hunts a lot of public ground, gets it done, has a lot of good deer, sees good deer, kills good deer. And I was like, man, I got to meet this Josh Prophet guy. And so as luck would have it, you were out at ATA this year and we got to do some hanging out. But for the folks out there listening that maybe don't know as much about you as I do, if you wouldn't mind, just give me a little background about yourself, you know, where you're from, what you do professionally, and what your deal is in the whitetail world.
My name is Josh Prophet. I'm from Western Kentucky, 34 years old. I've been hunting roughly probably 26, 27 years. I mean, I started really, really young. I've been bow hunting roughly probably 20 of those, right around there. Mm-hmm. So that's my main passion, is definitely bow hunting, and that's what gets me going. But I'm a coal miner at heart. That's what I do for a living. Married to a beautiful wife, 4 kids, and I am an extremely busy guy.
Nice. Yeah, between checking trail cameras, bow hunting, keeping the wife happy, and keeping the kids in check and busy, man, that's you got like 4 in coal mining. That's like 4 full-time jobs right there, I counted.
I don't know. You know, I sit down sometimes, and when everything's just gets spinning so fast, I'm like, man, how am I? You know, how am I even doing this right now? So you really got to prioritize. And because hunting is honestly a very selfish sport.
Yeah.
And so for a family man, you know, you really got to, you know, watch how you manage your time, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree, man. It's funny that you mentioned that, because I was just driving. I think it was yesterday. It might've been the day before. You and I were texting, and I started just thinking about all the, like, my friends, like the guys who are close friends, because as you go through life, like, you have friends you were friends with in high school or whatever, right, or that you grew up with, and, you know, I'm still friends with some of those guys and close friends with some of those guys, and then you kind of hit this next phase of your life, which is, like, whether you go to college or whatever, but you're out on your own, right, and you're kind of making your own way or making your own name or whatever, and you kind of usually have, like, a group of friends around that period of time, and then you go into this other phase, it's, you know, that's, you know, becoming a family man or whatever, right? Where you're starting a family and your priorities change a little bit, and you typically kind of have another group of friends that kind of are like that part of your life, probably for the foreseeable future or until the end of time, because you kind of are going through the same life phases together. And I was just stopped and I was thinking for a second. I was starting to count like my buddies who I'm pretty close with, and I was like, man, what's like the common thing? Because, you know, early in my days, you know, music was the common thing. It was like all my friends were musicians. Cause that's what I did. And now I was thinking about it, and I was like, you know, they're all basically hunters for the most part, but I was like, it's not just the hunting. I was like, what is it that makes us like close and that we get along really well and that we care about each other and stuff like that outside of being deer hunters and stuff? And I was like, you know what it is? Like, all the guys that I, you know, talk to and surround myself with are just like super driven, motivated guys who have their priorities right and put family first. You know, that was like, when I started thinking about it, I was like, how cool is it that I have been lucky enough to be surrounded by a bunch of dudes that are just quality guys that have the right things in priority, you know? And it was a feel good moment, I guess I should say, as I was driving down the road.
Yeah. I mean, the day that you put your hobbies in front of your family, I mean, it's time for a big reality check, and if you are doing that, then man, things at home probably really aren't going that good.
Right.
Right. I mean, they're just not.
Yeah. You said it, man. It's like my wife is definitely the barometer of whenever I'm teetering too far in one direction or the other. Cause there's definitely days where she's like, look, you need to go hunt. Cause I need you to leave the house for a little while. Like, you know what I mean?
I wish my wife would do that.
I know, right? It doesn't happen very often, but there's every now and then she's like, man, you're a handful right now. Like, you need to go. You just need to go get into a tree somewhere, you know? So
yeah, I couldn't imagine, man. I couldn't imagine because I keep all of my stuff. I got a little hunting truck with a camper shell on it, so all my stuff stays in my truck. If my wife told me that, there would probably be about 2.3 seconds before I had my boots on and was hitting the garage door opener.
Oh, man.
I'd be ready to go.
I hear that. So, man, you know, let's talk about the whole prioritization thing, man. Because, you know, as I was thinking about all this stuff the other day, you know, it's I was starting to think about that prioritization aspect of it, you know, how you balance everything, right? Because, like, as you mentioned, man, it's like you're married, you know, which... love my wife, or, you know, she's wonderful. You know, but there's definitely, you know, a management aspect to making sure that I have the right amount of time with her and helping with the, you know, we have one kid, so helping with our daughter and helping with the household stuff, making sure things are taken care of, you know, that way whenever I do go, you know, and am selfish to go out and do a hunt or whatever, you know, whatever the case is, she's cool with it and I'm not leaving anything, you know, undone here at the house. You know, how do you kind of manage all that, man? Because it's like you got four kids, married, coal miner, and ridiculously passionate deer hunter. How do you kind of balance all of it?
You know, back when I was younger, when I say younger, I'm 34. My son's fixing to turn 13 this spring. So I had my very first kid when I was young. Mm-hmm. And, when I was younger, my late teenage years and early 20s and mid 20s, like I was diehard, even when I had a couple kids. And I'll say it, man, I felt like now that I kind of put them on the back burner when I shouldn't have. And man, just when your kids are little, in my opinion, man, that's, you really need to be, you need to be with them as much as you can, because you know, you're molding and shaping them the way that you want them to grow up. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're your biggest fan and you're their hero. So
right.
I ended up, man, I have three kids with my ex-wife, and I got newly married or remarried in about 4 or 5 years or 5 years ago. Sorry.
Nice.
And
yeah, hopefully she didn't listen to this.
So yeah. Yeah. I'm sure she will, but it, she didn't understand hunting near as much as some of the other girls I dated, and we had a kid together, and I just really tried to, you know, look at it through her eyes. You know, I work swing shift, you know, I'm gone 14, 16 hours a day with work, and I get my other three kids every other weekend. So, no matter what, I'm always home that weekend. That's more or less my family weekend, you know. We all get together and that's when we're together. But it just opened my eyes, man, to how selfish I've been, you know, over the last 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I just needed a priority change. So I changed things around, man. And I do the best I can. My wife may argue with me sometimes, but I do the best I can. And, you know, deer hunting just had to hit the back burner. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that. I know I'll get to hunt more when my kids get older, but it's just, it does, man. It makes it, it makes hunting really tough, and you have to kind of take a different approach at it, in my opinion. You gotta look at it different. You gotta use different tactics. So, I mean, that's kind of where I am with it.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. Cause I'm right there with you, you know, as far as, you know, trying to prioritize my time and make sure I'm spending time home. You know, the one thing I have kind of working against me is most of the places that I hunt that are what I would consider, you know, my quality places to hunt are several hours drive from me. And I have a couple pieces close to me that I've started to figure out that I'm able to hunt and be close to home. So I can get out on some weekends and stuff like that and be, you know, if it's an evening hunt, I can get out on Saturday evening and be back, you know, to watch a movie and eat dinner and do all that stuff. to spend some family time. But I definitely hear you as far as like having to change things up. So, you know, and I kind of equate it to I'm having to hunt smarter and not harder. So I might not get out as many days as I have in the past, but I'm actually having more, you know, and better encounters than I've had. So I guess talk to me a little bit about like what you're doing that's helping you hunt smarter and maybe, you know, maximizing your time in the timber. Like what's kind of your process for that?
Well, it, beforehand, like when I was, I'm not talking a long time ago, neither, just maybe 5 years ago, like when I was scouting and running my cameras, like say I had 5 trail cameras with me. I was like, man, I got to get all 5 of these cameras out because they're not doing me any good at home. Mm-hmm. And, the same was with my hunting, man. I was like, I gotta get in the stand. I only got 4 days a month to hunt. Like I gotta get up in the tree. Mm-hmm. And, it wasn't working out good for me. And so now when I go out, if I got 5 trail cameras and I put 3 out, I'm very confident in them 3 when I come home with 2. I feel much better about it. Mm-hmm. And the same goes, you know, with my deer hunting. If I got, you know, 2 days to hunt, I'm probably going to scout or check cameras one of them. So, I mean, I don't get very much tree time. I'm a firm believer with the boots on the ground and, spending a lot of time scouting, trying to stay on fresh sign, picking up where deer are moving to. It was funny because I talked about this a little bit in the last podcast I did, or one of them. It was like the first day of my vacation this year, and I was like literally headed out of my house at the break of day, and I was going to scout and check cameras, and that's all I was doing. And it was like November, it was early November,
right?
And I had multiple people message me and were like, dude, what are you doing? It's November, man. You got to be up in the tree. And there's a little bit of truth to that. I agree
right.
to that.
Right.
You can catch that Vegas style look, but, scouting, the boots on the ground and, you know, this, the whole drive to want to do better is, man, I really feel like that's put more bucks on my wall than just climbing up a tree.
Right. Yeah, because the conventional wisdom there during that time frame is just like anything can happen. So just be in a tree, put yourself in a pinch point or a funnel somewhere and just and wait it out, right? That's what a lot of guys do. So I guess before we jump into like some of your approach, I guess let's talk a little bit about the type of places that you're hunting. Because I know, you know, you and I talked a little bit, you know, whenever I made a trip in Ohio, we've hunted similar type of ground and type of terrain. And I know you're hunting, you know, if not all, almost, you know, I would say the large majority of what you're hunting is public land. So, you know, talk to me a little bit about the type of land that you're hunting. Is it, you know, public versus private? You know, is it near ag, big woods? You know, what's the setup?
Man, I'm a big woods hunter. Now I do like my ag, don't get me wrong, but I say I like big prop. Let me rephrase that. I like big properties. Mm-hmm. I'm not real big on the small WMAs, and that may hurt me, you know, but I like the big WMAs that can hold a lot of pressure, that have you know, less access, and you know, I'm a firm believer in backup plans too. I'm literally right across the line from Indiana, so I can be in my Indiana hunting spots just as fast as I can my Kentucky. So, I tried the straight big woods, style, virtually no ag. And I'm not going to lie. Like it kicks my butt outside the rut. It kicks my butt.
Right.
My favorite WMA I hunt it's over 6,000 acres and it's big woods. And, but it does have ag as well, as far as like on the tops of the ridges and the low lines, and it, you know, it's hill country. So that's the type of places that I like to key in on is the bigger wood settings that does offer the food.
Right. So what is it about those big pieces that are attractive? Is it just the sheer size that you can, if you know that there's a deer there, that you're not limited by boundary lines? You know, is it the fact that, you know, it, what you said just a minute ago, that it can hold a lot more pressure. So even if there's a lot more hunters, there's a lot more pockets that aren't getting touched. So, you know, what is it about it that really kind of draws you to those big pieces?
I think I get bored.
Yeah.
My stepdad owns 260 acres and I've never deer hunted it.
Right.
The drive for me to get out and spread my wings. I love the, like I said, I don't keep going back to the boots on the ground, but I love to scout and to find new things and just the bigger areas, man. Like, I'm looking at my map right now and, my furthest camera I had out north to my, furthest camera south was almost 5 miles in between them.
Wow. Yeah, that's a fair piece there, man.
Yes. Yeah, the property is long and narrow, and I had cameras out all in between them. But, man, just it gives me room to find the deer because the deer on public land, they can get bumped around. And, you know, I can find them. And then, like a lot of things that people don't think about is a lot of people like to hunt, like, edges. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to get close to the private farm. You got to get close to the private. And, you know, I'm not saying that's a bad tactic, but a lot of these deer, man, if you get in a big enough piece, I mean, they pretty much live on the public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you got enough area to scout them, you know, you can find them because in August they may be over here. In December they may be 3 miles up the road.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that's.
That's, I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does. Now, actually, you and I were talking about that a little bit in text message, maybe, or when we spoke on the phone, I don't remember, but I know when I was out in Iowa, the thing that was kind of throwing me off, and I even mentioned it to John in the last podcast we did, which was, you know, I hunt similar type of terrain, I guess, as you and some of the places of Ohio that I'm hunting where it's, you know, bigger woods and not a lot of ag necessarily around. There's definitely ag, but you don't have to work very hard to get away from it, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But going out to Iowa, it's like it was just different because there's not as the part of Iowa that John lives in doesn't look like the rest of Iowa. I guess I should say that first. Like, you know, a lot of Iowa is pretty flat. Where John lives, it definitely has some, like, you know, big draws and big deep cuts, and, you know, there are definitely some ridges and stuff like that. Not maybe to the extent that, you know, you're familiar with in Kentucky or that I'm familiar with in PA. But there's definitely some topography, right? Some elevation changes and stuff like that. But there weren't, like, any, like, defined, like, saddles how I would look for in Ohio. You know, there's not necessarily, like, those points are a lot mm-hmm. more, they're a lot more subtle. And then there's so much ag there that, like, in talking to John, you know, I was looking at all these pieces that were really kind of deep in cover. And he was like, hey, he's like, you know, I think we're looking in some good spots. He's like, but out here, man, he's like, don't discount the ag. He was like, because it's not it's not Pennsylvania or even Ohio for that matter. He's like, where public land's going to get blistered with people. You know, he's like, it's going to be still pretty low pressure. He's like, and he's like, I've seen big deer near ag fields. You know, he's like, I've had some really good encounters in this particular spot that we were looking at. He was like, you know, so don't be afraid to get a little closer than maybe you would, you know, what you're used to hunting. And so I was thinking to myself, I was like, man, I got to remember that when I'm out there, because my first instinct is just to try to get in the middle of something where I don't think anyone is going to be. And that's pretty much everything mm-hmm. out there, because everyone has a farm that they're hunting out there for the most part where he's at. So, you know, how do you kind of balance that, I guess? Because you have ag nearby, right? And there's probably some decent spots yeah. for ag that would probably be pretty dynamite, right? But maybe you aren't setting up on them.
Man, well, one thing that a lot of people don't take into consideration, like there's a big difference in a 1,000-acre farm that you don't go into your sanctuaries, that you only check your cameras via truck or side by side on the field edges, that you just literally stay out of spots year round till they're just right, versus you know, a piece of public land that has hiking, horseback riding, small game hunting, deer hunting, fishing. So in my opinion, you can get away with so much more because just the deer are just used to you.
Right.
I mean, they're still deer, mm-hmm. but it's not near as big of a deal if you mess up on a buck and you blow him, you know, you blow him down or he blows you down, versus you're after your one target buck that you've waited for all season for this perfect wind, and you go in there and you mess him up. Yeah, I mean, it's just different.
Right. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, no, I hear you, man. I'm having to try to reconcile what my approach is going to be, you know. And when I say hunt, field edges or crops whenever I'm in Iowa, whenever I say that, it's like I'm still going to be, you know, 50 to 100 yards inside the timber, you know, right. Just because I'm banking on a mature deer is still going to cross check those doe trails that are heading into that food, you know, because I'm going to be out there in end of October, November. So, go ahead.
I mean, interrupt you, but I just thought of it. It's really weird because it's best if you really know your property well, like public or private. I'll just go back to public, but like on your incidents, it ain't going to be real good because you can only draw, you know, every 4 years.
Yeah.
But like the last WMA, I hunted for 10 years. 10 years, I've seen two. During hunting season, I seen two Pope and Young deer in the fields in daylight.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of nighttime pictures, but I mean, that was it. So I didn't really sit on fields. I didn't hunt real, real close to them. Well, I changed gears due to hunting pressure and the deer density dropping. Man, this new place I'm hunting, it's really weird because, the deer will use the fields in the daylight, you know, almost like a private setting. 2 years ago, we killed 150 inch deer in a food plot on public land.
Wow.
You know, but food does, you know, these fields, they do attract two things because they look good. They attract the hunters and they attract the deer.
Right.
But you know, if it's November and you got a field full of does, you got 10 or 15 does out in the field. I don't care where you are. Buck's not going to wait till. He's not going to wait till it gets dark to come out there. Not in November. Right. Or if the hunting pressure's really low, he may be out there. That's a good, you know, that's a good way to look at it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a few months to finalize my plan, but I think the one spot I'm definitely going to play the food a little bit and sit back in, you know, about 100 yards off, which I found some decent sign just about in that area. And then some really thick cover as well. And actually John had a really, I guess what it was maybe 2-3 years ago, he had an encounter with a really big deer in that general area. And he was like, he was just on a Sunday cruise, scent checking, you know, trails for does. He was like hanging out about 100 yards off the food without a care in the world, you know? So, not necessarily, I'm not using that information as like the end all be all, reason for possibly hunting in that general area, but it's that along with the sign that I saw as I was walking through, I was like, all right, yeah, this is a spot that's going to, you know, be worth a couple sets anyway to see what happens.
Right.
You know, so one thing I want to ask though, man, is with big woods, you know, you mentioned, you know, you might get some Vegas style luck, right? And I've not yet had the Vegas style luck in the big woods. so one of the hardest things, and Chad and I have talked about this a little bit, and I'm sure you both have probably talked about this together, is just getting on good deer in the big woods. Let me put it this way. Getting on good deer anywhere in general can be hard, right? The big woods adds mm-hmm. just an extra element of difficulty because there's, I feel like, and this is what Chad and I were talking about, we were debating, like, how long is their line of movement, right? Even if you take it to rut, because, you know, he and I have talked about, like, micro patterns, like, during the rut timing, it's kind of driven around finding a doe, right? But if you're in the earlier part of the season, like, say, October, right, where that's not really a factor, and you're really just going off of bed to food, it's like, in those big wood settings, man, it's like, there's food everywhere, at least a lot of the places I've hunted, just because of all the browse that's in there. And they have how many spots there possibly could bed in that setting as well. It's not like they're going to use this one bed, you know what I mean? So talk to me a little bit about how you go about kind of breaking it down, especially in that October leading up to like maybe pre-rut time, and to try to find and locate good deer and be able to try to get on some type of, you know, something that resembles a pattern.
Man, I would have started in the winter, you know, I would have been shed hunting and looking for beds, you know, prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, man. A lot of people, a lot of people underestimate like natural browse. Mm-hmm. And you know, they think, field, or ag field. And you know, that's great, but And deer eat a lot of other things too.
Yeah.
And like you're saying, a big wood setting where there's, you know, maybe not near as much as that type of stuff. Maybe you just got to start early. Mm-hmm. You know, you gotta get on digitally, look online, look on a map, think about, okay, this looks like a good bed. This looks like a good bed. This looks like where a bed could be. And then you got to go find it.
Right.
And then, you know, as a season rolls around, man, one of the best arsenals, it's in my top three that you can put out is a trail camera.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You can buy an Exodus camera for $145. It's got theft coverage, or you can go to Walmart and buy a $50 Tasco.
Right.
And you've already got your scouting done. So you found a bed, or you think you know where they're bedding, and you put your camera or two out and you start getting a picture of a buck, then okay, well, I got a picture of him here. I think his bed's here. Now, what's he feeding on? And that's kind of how I go about it. Cause if a guy knows where a deer is bedding and he knows where he's feeding and he has the kicker and he has the time to hunt, there's no reason why he shouldn't kill him.
Right.
But to line all three of those up is pretty hard to do, in my opinion.
right. It's easy. Like, it's one of those things where, you know, we'll talk to, you know, we've done a couple podcasts recently with Cody. And then we had a chance to, while I was in Iowa, we had a chance to talk to Andre a little bit. And, you know, I know you're kind of a pretty aggressive hunter too. And I'm curious, I want to ask you another question after this, but you know, they're both obviously well known for being super aggressive, and you know, you talk to either one of them and they'll be like, yeah, you find the deer, you find where he's bedding, you find where he's feeding. If you know those two things, you just go kill him. He's like, and if you bump him, then you just go find another deer. And it sounds really easy, right? It's like, oh yeah, super easy. But well, to your point, it's like,
I mean, if that's all you do.
Well, yeah. Yeah. If it's all, yeah. But it's like you said, it's lining those three things up together at the same time on a specific deer to know that I'm going to go kill him. It's just like, you don't always necessarily have it right, or there's something that's not going to be in your favor that day. The wind swirls or whatever the case might be, or, you know, a coyote came through and knocked him out of, you know, moved him away from where he was going to bed that day, or whatever it is. It's the principles are easy. The execution is hard, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, I completely agree. It all sounds easy when you say it, but then when you go out there, it's kind of,
yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's a different. So how would you rate as far as like your aggressiveness? Like, do you feel like you're an aggressive hunter? Do you feel like you're a patient hunter? Like, where do you kind of fall on that spectrum?
On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the most aggressive, I'm like at 11.
Yeah. Okay. Nice.
I'll run him out.
Right.
And, but you know, that just goes back to the other things, man. Like when you start to run so many cameras on like public property and you spend like me, I've been hunting public, I don't know, roughly 15 years, 13 to 15 years. Like, you start to look at things different. And with that many cameras, man, you wouldn't believe how many people are in the woods.
Right.
I mean, like nighttime, daytime. And then, so in my mind, you know, it may not be true. If I bump him, I'm just like, well, man, he's already seen this 10,000 times. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then for me, you know, I'm fortunate to have enough cameras, man. If I bump a deer, I'm normally picking him right back up.
Right.
So to me, man, I'll go in and, you know, I'll run him out of there.
Right.
If I'm after a specific deer, I'll run him out. I generally like to stack my odds. I don't really like to go after a specific deer. I like to go out in a general area that has a lot of bucks.
Right. Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It's like you're looking for, you know, just like some general habitat terrain, you know, that is going to be conducive to hold multiple deer that you want to be after, as opposed to saying, hey, there's this one buck that's bedding on this real small area and putting all your chips into that necessarily. Right. Makes sense. It's like, you know.
Right. I mean, the way that I run my cameras are, I can normally go in and check like five or six of them in several hundred acres. And then, you know, over thousands of acres, you know, you'll have a place that is like a buck motel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's kind of how my hunt season was, man. I went to an area. Yeah, I had bigger deer on camera,
mm-hmm.
but I went to an area where I had the most of them, because, man, my time is just so limited. And then, you know, I knew, like, if I bump this deer, then I got five other ones that are just as big, if not bigger, right here.
Right. Yeah. It's, I kind of learned that lesson hard, I guess, not this past year, but the year before, where I was trying to hunt one particular deer, had an encounter with him opening day, within shooting range, but he was behind some brush. Another deer got a little spooky, got downwind of me and walked away, and he followed it out. And that was one of those things where it's like, I had put all my chips on that deer. Right. And I was like, and I knew I knew what he was going to do. I mean, I did everything except release the arrow on him. And that kind of cured me, actually. From that point forward, I was like, you know, it was that I want to hunt good deer, not a deer, you know? And I know that's like, you're talking about it. And like, when you're hunting aggressive, that's kind of like the mentality you have to have. I know in talking to Cody and John, it's like, they do the same thing where it's like, they're after a good deer, not necessarily a deer. Right. And they'll know that there's several good deer in a particular area. And, if they know where one's at, they'll try to go get him. Right. But if that one doesn't work out, they're not beholden to that one deer for the season if another one that fits their profile comes around. Right. I guess what I'm saying. So, you know, that's, I learned that lesson the hard way. So let me ask you this, man. So a buck motel, right? Have you found anything that between all the buck motels that you may have found, have you seen any type of trend or similarities between them that you can start to say like, hey, I know whenever I'm looking for an area, it's going to hold several good deer. I'm looking for these three things like to start, and I'll know that I'll be kind of in a good area. Anything like that?
Yeah. It's normally good bedding and food. I mean, a deer needs a place where he can feel halfway secure, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Then they're slaves to their stomach, so they got to have something to eat. The area that I hunted in a lot this fall, man, there was a private farm, and it was clear cut, literally like, man, there just wasn't very many trees on it. Mm-hmm. And, man, them deer ran in and out that private to the public all the time. I had maybe 160-inch deer on camera that come out of it, probably 10, 135 to 150. Wow. And we're talking on like a 300-acre area. So, yeah. Man, if a rabbit likes it, a deer loves it.
Right.
You know, that's one thing that I think a lot of people are starting to realize, like, you got to set yourself up to kill a deer, not see a deer.
Right.
And them big, pretty hardwoods are awesome. They look good, and you do see good deer in them. But a lot of times, man, they're 100 yards through the woods, and yeah, it was a great encounter, but you didn't kill him. And then, so if you get in, generally, when I get in a little thicker area, man, just it seems like the deer numbers, not just, you know, the bucks, but the deer numbers just double.
Right.
And then if you can get that somewhere within a quarter mile, half mile of a good food source, yeah, I mean, your buck motel is going to be there somewhere. I guarantee you. Well, if the deer density is high enough, I'd say it will be.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, that's, you always have to kind of take that into consideration. You have to think about what is the opportunity in the area that you're hunting, right? You can't expect
to
see.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you can't expect to see 20 Pope and Younger better deer if, you know, if you have a low deer density. You might see two, and that might be a buck motel for that area. You know what I mean?
Right. And that was leading up to what I was going to say. Like, man, you need to set your own goals, because the industry and the social media, you know, that somebody sees this deer and they think, well, you know, I got to do this or I got to do that. Man, like, you need to set your own path. And just because he's over here killing 160-inch or 170-inch deer every year, and he's passing 3-year-old deer or 4-year-old deer, that doesn't mean that you have to do it, because y'all's circumstances may be, you know, totally, totally different. And I think as a hunter, man, that really messes with a lot of people.
It does, man. I agree. And I think it can suck the fun out of it too. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. 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 I listened to it was two week or two ago. I was in church, and the preacher, he was preaching a sermon, and he used the analogy like, these, I forgot who it was, peasants or somebody. They were putting these rocks in this wagon, and before you know it, the wagon was broke. They blew the wheels off the wagon because they loaded it down with rocks too much, man. And you can do that. You can do that same thing hunting. Like, you think, well, I got to kill this kind of deer, so you throw this rock in the wagon. Well, I need this trail camera, so I throw this rock in the wagon. Well, I got to have that sick air too, you gear, so I throw this in the wagon. And before you know it, man, you're busted chasing all these dreams that you didn't even make up yourself, and you're out there spinning around not knowing what you're doing.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you, man. And I kind of feel like hunting is the place where I go to take rocks out of my wagon. You know what I mean? It's
Yep. You and me are a lot alike.
Yeah, brother. I mean, I go there. Like we were talking at the beginning earlier, man, how much responsibility we have between, you know, jobs, you know, families, you know, kids, of course, as well, personal things that we want to do, you know what I mean? And try not to be selfish and trying to reconcile all that, you know, in our minds of how we can give enough to everybody who needs from us, but still retain a little part for ourselves. You know what I mean? To, you know, keep ourselves, you know, satisfied, or not satisfied isn't the right word, but sometimes it's just so you can keep your sanity. You know what I mean? And in the timber, man, it's like going to church to a degree. You know what I mean? Like, you get to be there and you get the silence, and you get to kind of unravel things in your mind and think about things in a different way, and you don't have outside influences. It's even better if you can go somewhere where you don't have cell service. I mean, that's like one of my favorite things. I can't even get on like Instagram or Facebook or emails or text messages or whatever. I mean, that's just a beautiful thing, you know, and allows you to, that's such a good analogy, man. Like, the timber is definitely a place that I go to take the rocks out of the wagon. That's for sure.
You know? Oh yeah, man. I agree. And it's weird that we're talking about this, because years ago, man, I was that guy that, you know, when it was rolling into mid-December, I was getting stressed because I haven't killed one. And it was like getting down to crunch time, and I was really putting some pressure on myself, and I just didn't enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And now that my time is so limited, man, when I get out there, you know, I'm just happy to be there. I'm happy I had a good adventure, good scenery on the drive on the way there. And it's just, it's so much more enjoyable now than what it was 10 years ago for me.
And even the parts that kind of, that aren't fun in the moment, right? Like that type 2 fun where it's like, it was tough, like the hike in or whatever. Like, for example, if there's a spot that's really steep and it was just a beater, you know what I mean? It's like, when you get done with it, it's like, you know, at the end of the day, you get back to the hunt. It's like, you're thankful for that kind of adversity. You know what I mean? Because it's like, I mean, that type of stuff will cleanse you too. You know what I mean? It's not just sitting in the tree. It's the whole process. Like, embrace the process, not the end point, I guess the moral of the story.
So, oh yeah, good way to put it.
Yeah. But so I want to talk. So I think you hit on something interesting where you're just kind of talking about how media or social media kind of influences things. And I've heard you say this before. And I think this was just you and I were talking at ATA, I think is when it was. And we were talking about access in general, right? And, you know, there's this idea that people have. It's like, especially, you know, look, I know you and I both like to work out and stay in shape and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I do it for health reasons. I also do it because I like to not get tired when I hunt and be able to do what I need to do and not be limited by that. But, you know, there's definitely this aspect of hunting that has kind of evolved as the hunting athlete. And it's all based on, like, can you go deeper? Can you go farther? Because that's like where the pot of gold is. And I think that sometimes in doing that, we overlook some of the opportunities that might look like they're too good to be true, but are true, if that makes sense. So, I mean, I guess talk to me a little bit about like your access and how you access things. How far are you hiking in? Like, do you feel like you have to hike 5 miles in to kill a good deer? Or do you feel like you can find overlooked spots that people walk right by on the way in?
Well, I mean, my pot of gold was 150 yards from my truck this year. If that tells you anything.
Right.
And that's the honest gosh, it was the best drag I'd ever had. But,
right,
man, I used to think, like, man, go deep, hunt the edges, and, you know, and what you have to do is you have to go either where the deer are really used to people or where people don't go. And a lot of times, you know, that can literally be right by the parking lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's all going to determine you know, how much you scout is how you're going to find these places. And, you know, I've had so many people tell me, like, I'll find some rubs and it'll be real close to a parking lot, or, and they'll be like, man, that's all nighttime movement. I'm like, how do you know?
Right.
Just because it's right here, how do you know? Because it's not a mile and a half or two off the, you know, off the beaten path. And we're like, well, a lot of people don't realize is if you're hunting a piece like I hunt and you're going in deep and there's an access point, 2 miles on the other side of the woods or three, like there's other people doing the same thing. So you done hiked all this way for no reason, because you got a guy coming, you're coming in from the east, walking a mile, and you got a guy coming in from the west, and then you end up in the middle of this property, literally in the middle of nowhere, and you're right beside each other, and you're like, how'd that happen?
Right.
I've had that happen to me back. But so you just gotta scout, man. These places can be anywhere. They can be 3 miles back. They can literally be right there where you can see your truck.
Right. And sometimes
I say,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, man, put a camera on it. It doesn't matter, you know, where it is. And just because you see somebody like while you're hunting doesn't mean that the hunt's over, that anything is messed up. I used to be that guy years and years ago. You know, I'd see somebody, I was like, man, hunt's over. You know, just guy would be getting out of a stand, or I would bump into him, or that's just not how it is, man. People could tell me it is, but I look around at, you know, some of the deer and the stories I could tell you, and it's not true. Just because other people are hunting, just because you're not a mile off the road, doesn't mean that you won't have a good hunt. Bottom line is you go where the deer are.
Right. And part of that too is using the pressure around you to hunt the pressure, essentially. Right.
Yep. Yeah, you can find all that. You can find pressure bedding, and then if you know, like I know, you know, from years of hunting spot, when the influx of hunters come in November, because that's when 80% of your people hunt public ground, like you know where the deer are going to go, because right. they've been doing it for years.
Right. So, you know, to that point, like what time of year are you really focusing on? Like, you know, are you, given that you have, you know, obligations, you know, outside of hunting and stuff like that, do you prioritize the rut timing because you know that there's, you know, anything can kind of happen? Or are you, you know, an October kind of guy who knows, hey, I've done my work, I know where there's some deer at, I'm just going to go try to extract a deer?
I try not to let my season never end. Right. My wife will tell you that. Like, it's like 365 days for me, you know. A lot of people are fishing, and I've already found two or three bucks I'll shoot when they're still fishing before they ever even put their cameras out. But I do use my vacation time in November just because my hunting is so, so limited, and I know, like, that's my best time to kill one. So that's when I do it. But, man, it can be done anytime. Right. It was like October 14th, 15th, and 16th. I had one camera that had five or six deer over 135 on it. 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning this year.
Late, so getting late back. It's awfully late to get back to bed, right?
You know, you're close. Yeah. That's when you know you're close to where they're at.
Yeah.
I focus in November. You know, I try to do my bell to bell sets, but it can be done anytime. And like the opening day, I'm out there.
Right.
And you know, I'm out there. My time is so limited that every weekend I go, even if the weather's not the greatest, even if the wind's a little high, or even if it's too hot, you know, I'm still going to go, because I know in the back of my mind, all the years that I've been doing it, everything that I've ever listened to, or most people have ever told me, is completely the opposite of what I've learned, especially on the public. Like, it's too windy, you don't need to be out there. Well, man, the field was full of deer.
Right.
Or you can't do that. Well, why can't I just kill the deer doing it?
Right. Or you can't hunt. So let me ask you this. That's a nice segue, because you always hear people talk about, and I started kind of throwing this away a little bit, to a degree within reason, is you always hear people talk about you can't hunt mornings in October, right? So where do you fall on that? Are you a morning hunter in October, or are you mainly hunting evenings? Will you hunt a morning in October, or what does it take to get you in a tree in a morning set for October?
Well, you gotta think of it like the big picture. Like a deer's life is opposite than ours. Like, you know, their evening our evening is their morning. Mm-hmm. So their time is basically switched for us, and our AM is, you know, their evening. So you need to understand that first. But I'll go out anytime, man. If it's a hot morning in October, you know, I will push on in there, just because if I don't go, then, you know, I know it's going to be 2 weeks before I can go again. You know, I may not get real aggressive. Obviously I'm a big fan of the weather. Very, very big fan of the weather, but, I'll hunt any morning in October. I'll hunt late mornings, or I'll hunt mornings in September. That doesn't bother me. And I didn't used to be that way,
right?
Because in all honesty, like, I grew up not knocking anybody, but I grew up like watching the juries and this and that. And I still think a lot about them, but they were like, you know, October's an afternoon game, and it kind of is, but you know, that goes back to doing your scouting and trying to figure out where they're bedding at. You know, they're moving somewhere in the daylight. That deer's not laying down at dark, you know, before it gets dark, before it gets daylight every morning, just sitting there all day. Like, he's going to get up and do a little something.
Right. And it kind of goes the same for the lull too, right? It's when you look at any studies that people have done around like GPS collar movement and stuff like that, they increasingly move from the time that they basically go hard horned, right? Their movement increases through the basically week by week, right, until you hit rut where their movement is crazy, right? And so it's just, I mean, the rationale of like the October lull that they're just not moving just doesn't hold water, right? Because all the actual science and research data has told us differently. It's like, you're probably just, if you're not seeing deer during that time of year, you're probably just not in the right spot. It's not that the deer aren't moving, right?
Yeah, I agree, man. And you just really have to, a lot of this comes with time. Like, you got to really think what's going on. Like, you got to think about the rut coming up, and they're moving. Now, I don't think they're moving as far as what they may have been, but you're just not, like you said, you're not on the deer, and that's where you need to be. You got to be where they are.
Right. Cause I think the part that, you know, and look, I'm guilty of it too. And I think, you know, I think every hunter is to a degree. It's like, there's so many variables and puzzle pieces to put together that you may just be missing a piece in that particular hunt or whatever. Right. Cause especially that time of year, because it's not as easy as where's the doe bedding at, and let me set myself up on the downwind side of doe bedding, or let me set myself up in a pinch point leading in between two you know, areas of doe bedding, right? Because bucks are going to have to travel through this area. Like, that time of year is a little bit more, like, you gotta know where the deer are at, right? It's a little less luck and a little bit more strategy of figuring it out, right? Especially once you kind of hit the lull and you have to think about shifting food sources and their biology starting to change a little bit during that time as well. It's like, all these things, people have been in the timber now, so there's been a little bit more pressure because you're a couple weeks into the season. You know, it's like, all these things kind of play a factor, and those setups you were seeing deer at the beginning of the season, you know, may not be good any longer for all those reasons, right?
Right. I agree, man. I agree. And that's when you're just going to have to scout, man. You're going to have to scout. Let's just say it's October 15th. That's prime lull, right? What they say?
Right.
And let's say you go into a spot that you've never hunted, and you go in there and you see that cedar tree 100 yards through the woods. You go to it, and it is literally as big around as your calf, and it is rubbed, shredded 4 foot tall.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start finding other rubs and a scrape here and there. So obviously, you know, there is a big buck in the area.
Mm-hmm.
You got 2 or 3 days to hunt. So, man, pull out your phone and look at the topographic, man. And if it's flat ground, you know, look for thick areas. Try to figure out where's that deer, you know, where's he bedding at? If there's an ag field at, you can almost guarantee you know where he's going.
Right. Right. In the evening, and he's definitely making his way there. It's just a matter of where can you intercept him at.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I mean, he may, you know, if it's that time of year, he may not get out there till a couple hours after dark. But yeah. I guarantee you, the 30 minutes before the sun goes down, he's up milling around somewhere, and you just you got to do your best to figure it out. And a lot of times, you strike out more than what you hit the paw, but and that's part of it. And that's what makes it fun. That's what makes it deer hunting.
Yeah, exactly. And these guys, you know, kill big deer too. It's like people, they don't realize how much time they put into this stuff. It's not like they go out and do like three sets a year and have it all figured out and kill a deer, you know, especially guys that are hunting public ground and stuff like that are having success. It's like these guys are putting, you know, dudes are putting time in, you know what I mean, to figure the stuff out. You know, it's, you know, you ask anyone who kills good deer and you're like, you included, it's like you screw up a lot more than you win. You know what I mean? It's like the batting average, if you're going like on a per day hunt, and versus how often you have a kill, right, or an opportunity to, it's like your batting averages our batting averages as hunters are pretty low just in general, regardless of how, you know, good someone is or perceived to be, right?
So, I agree. Yeah. I agree.
So, man, I want to talk about access just for one more second, you know, because I know that, you know, when you're hunting public ground with all the pressure and stuff like that, it's, and especially if it's a big piece, you know, access plays a big role in, you know, of course, getting in and out undetected, you know, and making mm-hmm. sure you're clean, because you just don't really want to tip anything off. You know, what are you looking for in access? Are there certain types of things that you look for when you're trying to find, you know, a way into a location, you know, that you're, you know, are you looking for creeks to kind of walk up through, or are you looking for ridges to kind of hide behind until you kind of get to your spot? You know, just, I guess, talk me through a little bit what you look for in access.
That's one of the first things I look at, like when I look at a piece of property, or any, you know, any piece of public, is, you know, access, like, where are the people coming and where are they going? And I like to, you know, download like the PDF files that have the access points. And, you know, it's, I like them as spread apart as far as I can, because that gives you the best chance of not running into anybody or somebody running into you. So that's where I like to start, the furthest access points away. And as far as just literally getting to the stand, If I can get on a road, you know, I like to walk the roads. I listened to a podcast where a guy said something like, you know, he didn't walk the road. I don't remember why he didn't walk the roads. I mean, the more you can stay on where a deer are used to you, the better.
Right.
And I'm not saying like, if you can't get down in a creek and slip into a spot, then to do it, but. And a lot of my areas are, I find a good location to where there's not another place where somebody can access real close to me mm-hmm. with, you know, like another vehicle. And then I'll just walk the road or the fire break, and I'm generally not too far off of them. Mm-hmm. I don't take off bouncing off through the big woods real, real far. But a lot of these places I hunt, you know, they got really good access through them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But, the less access, you know, if you got 1,000 roads going everywhere and there's a half a mile in between each road everywhere, that's probably not going to be as good. But if you got a mile or two, you know, in between this road and that road and a mile from this parking place to that parking place, that's the kind of areas that I like to look at.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. Just because, you know, even if you are, you know, even if there are hunters there, you're already starting off, you know, a mile or whatever apart from one another. So there's no, it would take a lot for you to get on top of each other, I guess, essentially. Right.
Right. Right. And I, you know, that it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, if it all depends, man, like I've ran into guys that, man, were just, you know, awesome hunters. Like we ran into each other in the middle of nowhere. And he's like, well, I'm going to go over here. I'm like, okay. So we, you know, we kept it good. And I'm like, well, I'll go over here and had great hunts, seen big deer, a lot of deer. And then I've been in places where I ran into people and they beat their stand all to heck. And they, you know, like, why are you sitting there, man? The wind is dead wrong. Like you're messing it all up. But it, I don't know, man. I guess the main thing I look for is just how far a lot of the parking places and the road and your foot access is away from each other.
Right. Yeah. It's it sounds to me like it's one of those things where you're gonna access smart, not necessarily hard all the time. You know what I mean? Where it's like,
no.
If there's an easy way to get in that's gonna be right, then take the path that you're provided. But just make sure that it's the right access.
Yes. And to kind of like beat around that a little bit, like if you are like one of the guys, like one thing that I've really noticed, like if you really are wanting to like get away from people, and that doesn't necessarily mean that the hunting's going to be the best, but like if you really are wanting to get away from somebody, the thing that I have realized that keeps people away the most is big terrain features and water.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that should be a given, but you know, if you got to go up this one hill, this one pretty big hill, and then it's flat, you're normally pretty good. But if you got to go up four or five hills that, you know, is a good elevation, then, you know, that's going to knock down on the hunt pressure. And a lot of people, man, they don't have a kayak or they don't have a pair of waders. That just all depends on, you know, how you want to do it and how you look at it.
Right. So, you know, given that your access, you're finding whatever the best access is, and you're willing to take the hard route or the easy route, just depending on whichever, you know, way is going to, you know, be the best benefit. You know, are you hanging and hunting pretty much every hunt, or do you place some stands, you know, during the course of the year that you know you're going to want to get back to? Talk to me a little bit about that. Are you all mobile?
Yeah, all I do is hang and bang. I do have some stands, but man, I haven't hung them in, it's been a couple of years. And there's nothing wrong with either way. Like if you're, you know, if you can only hunt the rut and you know through time that this saddle or this bench or, you know, this transition area is good, there's nothing wrong with going back to that spot and hanging a stand and just and hunting there. It's a very effective way of doing it. But man, I've been hanging and banging since way before it got cool. Yeah, I mean, nice. That's how I've been hunting public, though. I mean, at least 13 years.
Right. And that was that was before the stands got as light as they did too.
Yeah. Yeah. I have the big assaults is what I have. And I bought them after I started. It's still heavy.
Yeah.
You know, my pack is heavy. I run a good comfortable frame, but yeah, I strictly hang and bang.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, most guys, if they're getting after it on public and being aggressive, it's like, you almost have to be. I wanted to ask you this, man, cause I'm curious, like if you're in the middle of a hunt, right, will you pull your set in the middle of a hunt and move 60 yards if you think you need to move, or do you kind of let the area play out? Because that's one of the things that I've, you know, for me that I think I need to do a better job of. Like there's days where I'll be in a, you know, I'll be in a tree and, you know, I'll see a couple deer, you know, wherever they're 50 yards, maybe they're 60 yards away. And I'll see like maybe two or three that consistently were that far away from me. And there's some, or I don't know, there's just something in my brain of like how I've done it in the past where I'm like, you know what, I just need to be patient and sit this spot. You know, this is where I need to be. But whenever the deer are telling me that, hey man, you're probably like 40 yards out of the game, you know, so that's one of the things I want to work on this year, is just being more aggressive in the sense of like, hey, I'll pull my set in the middle of the hunt if I need to, if I think that's the best chance I'm going to have. Where do you kind of fall with that?
You're scared because you think you're going to get down and mess it up when probably you're nothing ever knew, you know, nothing's ever going to know that you ever moved to
right.
Shoot it or it wins you when you're up in the stand. But I'll move. Okay. I'll move in a heartbeat. The deer I shot this year, the wind was at between 9 and 9:30 was going to make a complete change. So I knew I had to get down, but I wanted to be there till it changed.
Mm-hmm.
And the weatherman was actually right on cue, man. So when the wind changed, I got down and I had about a mile. I had about a mile move. I was really wanting to go to a spot, man. I shot that deer this year on the way on the ground. So man, you got to, the number one thing I think that a lot of people don't be afraid to be aggressive, but also follow your gut. But if you're seeing deer after deer 60 yards out or 40 yards out, then man, you need to move. Like you didn't do anything wrong. You were close. You just need to move.
Right. Yeah. And that was, that was kind of what happened to me a little bit in Ohio this year, as I sat a set because I was seeing deer. And I felt like it was so windy I couldn't hear. And I was like, I feel like I just need to be over on the other side of this, you know, like it was like a big, like, I guess it was an old logging road at one point, but it was all grown up and like the walls of the logging road were kind of falling in. So where it was now just like, looked like a big water runoff off the side of the mountain, essentially.
Right.
And it was just all grown up with, you know, briars and green briars and all that stuff where you couldn't really see across. And I was like, man, I feel like I'm missing deer. I feel like I'm not, because I can't hear. I was like, I feel like I'm missing deer that are over on the other side that I'm just not seeing or hearing. And so I finally made the move. And as soon as I did, man, I sat at like, I guess, three different times, that general area. And I moved maybe just, man, it was only probably 25 yards. And I had deer like walking up underneath me. You know what I mean? Saw a couple decent bucks. And I was like, man, if I would have possibly made this move a couple of days earlier and not been a bonehead. You know what I mean?
It's tough, man, because it's a lot of work to hang and bang. And it takes some time to move 40 yards or 60 yards sometimes. Like if you want to do it right and be quiet, then, you know, it just takes some time. And, you know, I've been there, you know, I've made them moves a bunch. And, you know, that's when I feel like I start making mistakes is like when I get really fatigued or when I kind of running off subject. But like, if you're hunting and you say you've got 2 weeks of hunting, there's nothing wrong with making mistakes because that's how you learn. But if you start making mistakes because you're getting sloppy and not trying, like there's a difference there. So if you got the time to like recharge your batteries, man, then do it. Because there's been a couple times like I've had a week and a half to hunt and literally I've drained myself. And I know me personally, I'll do good if I know it doesn't kill big deer, but I'll do better if I stay at home and get like a full 8 hours of sleep and get up and just go back out there mid morning and set the rest of the day.
No, I'm the same way, man. Like I learned that the hard way where, you know, it was, you know, I think it might've been the hunt I was doing with Chad when we were in Southern Ohio. And it just, I did a hunt in Montana, like just earlier in the year, right. Which was a pretty brutal backcountry style hunt. For a couple weeks. And then I came back and like jumped right into deer hunting, you know, for a couple weeks of, you know, the normal grind of like getting up early to work out before work and then going to work all day and doing all that stuff. Then trying to hunt every evening and every weekend that I could, you know, all day. And so by the time I got to the trip, you know, it was like I think Chad and I were hunting like 10 days, I think. And before we got to that trip, it's like, I was already kind of running on fumes. You know what I mean? And it was a 9-day, you know, grinder to where, you know, I remember the one day it was raining in the morning. I'd never been so happy for rain in my life, like pouring rain, like not the type of rain where you're
getting. Because you were going to get to sleep.
Oh, man. Yeah. I was like, I rolled over. I looked at Chad and I was like, is that rain? He's like, yep. And I'm like, I'm going back to sleep. He's like, me too. And we just, you know, slept for a couple extra hours. The rain kept on. We actually got up and went and drove into like the town and got like a good breakfast in us and stuff like that. And that was just like total attitude change. You know what I mean? Like I was ready for the rest.
Oh yeah.
For the next half of the trip. You know what I mean? I was all in from there on. But I mean, I did that even this year where like the one day I was just like, you know what? I'm tired. I'm gonna sleep in a little bit and I'm gonna go in mid morning or just like right before lunchtime and hunt the rest of the day or whatever. I mean, some guys will do that. There's one piece that I was hunting this year, that swamp that I've told you about, that I finally toward the end started figuring it out. I was like, cause anytime I'd walk into it, I'd bump deer. Because the access was really kind of tough. And I started going in mid-morning because I could use the road traffic as my cover sound. And going in mid-morning, I wasn't running into anything coming on the way back to bed. So I started going in. Instead of at the break of dawn, I'd go in at like 8:30, 9 o'clock, 9:30. And once I started doing that, no more deer encounters on the hike in, which was good.
Right.
You know,
right. That's good, man. Live and learn.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, or shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me, I guess is the way you say it. But,
right.
So speaking of that, man, what's the one thing from this year that you want to try to be better at next year?
one thing that I want to be better at. I think it's my patience.
Yeah.
Because I'm fortunate that I have, you know, I hunt a really big piece and I have a lot of cameras and there's a lot of good deer running around. And a lot of times, like, I won't be seeing no deer and I know I'm in the right spot, but for some reason I got this little tick in my ear that's always like, oh man, you need to move. And that cost me a great deer this year. I think it did. I was hunting this place and I was going back, you know, forth, like, where do I go? And I told myself, like, I need to be here. And then at this time I need to move. And when the whole time I was sitting there in the morning, I did not follow my gut, which I should have. I was like, Josh, you just need to sit here and be patient. You need to sit here and be patient. But the whole time I was like, man, all these deer start moving over here at this time. Well, I made the move and it still wasn't a bad hunt, but when I pulled that camera, I'm not joking, within an hour after I got down, I had pictures of a beautiful 140, 150 inch deer, 10 foot of where I was. That's what I need to work out on. I'm normally patient for a little bit, but then as my vacation and my season goes on, like, I feel like I need to go, but really I need to be more patient. It's not that I want to come home or not that I want to hunt, just I want to move.
Right.
And I think that's part of my aggressiveness that I maybe need to chill out a little bit, but I think that I need to be a little bit more patient.
Yeah. I think that's something I've heard from guys where it's like when they talk about hunting aggressive, you know, it's hunting aggressive on your setups. Right. Of like, let's get in the business let's get in the bedroom or close to the bedroom as we can. If you know that there's a deer there, go get it. Don't spend your time, you know, chipping off things at the edges and stuff like that. Just get all up in his business and try to kill him. But there is the aspect of it where it's, you know, if you've done your homework, right. And you do, you know, you put boots on the ground like no one's business and you know, there's supposed to be a deer there, then just believe the sign. And that goes back to what you were saying before, which is trust your gut, right? It's like, if you know you've done your work and you know something's supposed to happen there, just let it happen.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, your mind plays games with you, man. Cause you're like, man, I've got pictures of these deer, you know, two or three bucks all over here. Where are they at? And they're there. I've figured that out the hard way. I mean, they're there. It's a waiting game.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, I've kept you just a little over an hour, dude. We'll have to do a part two because we didn't even get into trad bows, and I want to talk to you about some trad hunting and stuff like that. But it's a Sunday here. I want to make sure you have some time to spend with your family so we can keep those family points all good for the hunting season for you. And I actually need to make sure my family points are in order too for hunting season. So, but before I get going, man, let folks know where they can find out more about you, where they can follow you.
Man, I am pretty low key on social media. Only thing I have is Instagram. You can follow me there at BG_bowhunter. That's the only place you'll find me. I'm pretty sure that I will be having some content coming out for Exodus this fall. So keep an eye out for that.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, dude, I appreciate you coming on, and we'll continue to text and chat throughout the summer or the winter, spring, summer. Here leading into fall, so I know what's going on with you. And one of these days I might try to get down there and hunt your neck of the woods too. But don't be a stranger, and we'll have you back on. We'll talk some trad bow soon.
Okay, buddy. Bye.
All right, folks, that is a wrap for today's show. I'd like to thank Josh for joining. Be sure to follow him on Instagram. That's BG Bowhunter. He puts out some cool content, a lot of great photos. You get to kind of follow along with him as he's scouting and hunting during the course of the year. He'll be switching gears here to the Springs of King here pretty quickly, or Kings of Spring, strike that, reverse it. We'd of course like to thank all of you for listening, and if you haven't yet, please head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating, and then be sure to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already done so. We'd be super appreciative if you do those handful of things for us. And before we shut this thing down, we need to give a big shout out to our partners who continue to help us make this podcast possible. Exodus Outdoor Gear, Trophy Ridge, Ozonix, Obsession Bows, Ramcap Broadheads, Trophy Taker Rests, and Dead Downwind. And until next time, we'll see y'all. I could show you through the door. I ain't welcome anymore. And long time coming if it all. It takes a special knowing to call a fall. Damaged heads, broken letters. Rationalize yourself in numbers, but I. Ah.